Collins. Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Monday, November 26, 2018. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving holiday break and that you didn't over-roast the turkey. We're over-roasting the planet, and we'll get to that in a moment. But first, I want to dedicate today's podcast to the memory of Dave Roberts Kelleher. Dave Roberts passed away in Michigan over the weekend at the age of 70 after a long battle with cancer. And Dave was the guy who gave me my big break here in San Francisco radio back in the early 1980s. I always wanted to host a morning show. That's where the action is. That's where the payoff is. The big paychecks go to morning hosts. And Dave believed in me, and he gave me that break. And it led to the longest gig I had in radio, nearly 8 years, at CBS in San Francisco. Dave was a great guy, a Renaissance man. He was taller than me, often cooler than me, and a brilliant radio programmer who had a research background. And he and I often had polite disagreements on how to run the radio station, but he always gave me the creative freedom that I needed to do the job. And Dave Roberts, I am forever grateful. Well, on Black Friday, I sat out the consumer mad dash. I didn't buy a thing, I promise. And that was the day the Trump administration decided that you would be sufficiently distracted that they could do a huge document dump, the Friday afternoon release of the latest report on climate change, issued by 13 federal agencies. This is mandated by Congress. And we will give the White House credit. While they tried to bury it and make sure that it was given as little coverage as possible, Trump started a Twitter war with the Supreme Court justice to provide some bizarre cover. But the White House didn't attempt to edit this report. They just let it come out, and they're ignoring it at our considerable peril. In 1,650 pages, the report lays out the forecast for the changing environment and the economic cost of it. Maybe that is an attempt to get Trump's attention, because all he cares about is the money. $141 billion from heat-related deaths, $118 billion from sea level rise, and $32 billion from infrastructure damage by the end of this century. And, of course, it also predicts that there will be more flooding, like the 2011 Missouri River flood that inundated a nuclear power plant near Omaha, forcing it to shut down for years. In the southwest, it'll be more droughts. And in the southeast, the wildfires that Trump says we can take care of if we cut more trees and rake the forests will be plaguing the southeastern United States, like the 2016 Great Smoky Mountain fires. And yesterday, it's unfortunate, there are two photos that I think are going to go viral. They're both taken at the San Diego border crossing near San Ysidro yesterday. One is the picture of a mother with her two toddlers. The kids are both barefoot, and one of them is still in diapers. And she's holding their hands as they reel from a wave of tear gas fired in their direction. And our government claims that these people were human shields pushed forward by the criminal gangs, the single males, that were trying to create some chaos so that they could rush the border. And that optic gives Trump the vindication. It's not accurate. It's not a real threat. But on Fox News, you see people throwing some rocks, challenging the Border Patrol, and then they felt they had no choice but to disperse them with tear gas. And this scene plays out as the Marines that Trump forced to the border in a bogus deployment sat idly 1,500 miles away from this emerging confrontation. And last night on 60 Minutes, a good report, They showed that Trump was separating families long before zero tolerance took effect in late April or early May of this year. More children were separated from their parents than previously reported, and that there were no preparations whatsoever, even to try to just tag people and keep records on the father who was deported while the child was kept in the United States. Words fail me when you talk about this kind of inhumanity perpetrated out of this phony, stoked fear that our borders being overrun and it's somehow going to ruin our country. And this will only harden the attitudes of the anti-immigrant people who Trump has rallied repeatedly to his support. Oh, and he's going to do it again in Mississippi, two stops there today. We'll get to that a little bit later. And as part of the action yesterday, 42 migrants were arrested on the U.S. side of the border, and about 39 others were arrested on the Mexican side. A spokesman said 8 of those arrested were women, but only a few children were involved. The vast majority of the people we're dealing with are adult males, he said. And he claimed that some migrants had pelted agents with rocks and debris. Once our agents were assaulted, the numbers started growing. We had 2 or 3 agents at a time, initially facing hundreds of people at a time. The pictures don't support that. Now, 3 agents were reportedly struck by rocks. They were wearing helmets, shields, and vests, and they were not injured. But they had to deploy the gas. And by the way, that human shield claim has been rejected by migrants in the group. And Trump hysterically tweeting, Mexico should move the flag-waving migrants, many of whom are stone-cold criminals. There is no evidence of that. And he completed the sentence, Mexico should move them back to their countries. Do it by plane, by bus, do it any way you want, but they're not coming into the USA. We will close the border permanently if need be. Congress, fund the wall. He forgot to add, drawbridge up at Fortress America. And the mayor of Tijuana has asked the UN to intervene because of the humanitarian crisis of 5,000 migrants who are assembling there, hoping to get into the United States. And Trump tried a flim-flam maneuver. He tried to con or cram down a deal on the incoming government of Mexico. I think Lopez, what is his name? Jose Andre Manuel Lopez Obrador. AMLO is his acronym. Now, he is supposed to take office on Saturday. And the Washington Post and the New York Times joined in, reported falsely that there was a deal. Here's the lead paragraph from the Sunday New York Times story. Leaders of the incoming Mexican government are in talks with American officials to allow migrants applying for asylum in the United States to remain in Mexico while they await a decision. A drastic overhaul of current policy that Trump suggested was as good as a done deal. So the Post ran with it. The Times a little bit more cautious. And today, The Guardian reports, Mexico denies deal with U.S. on asylum seekers at border. The incoming government has denied reaching a deal with the Trump administration. No agreement of any kind exists between Mexico's future federal government and the United States, said the incoming Interior Minister, Olga Sanchez Cordero. So, it shows how desperate Trump is. And just how slippery he thinks he can be. Speaking of slippery, Hillary Clinton kind of skidded in an interview she gave last week, telling that she believes that European leaders need to put limits on migration because it is fueling the right-wing populism spreading across the continent. Now, nowhere in her quoted remarks does she acknowledge that the European wave of migrants and refugees are directly related to the United States' misadventures in the Middle East, starting with the Iraq War she supported, then the massive displacement of people from Syria, the war she wanted to widen? And the large numbers of people who've come either from Libya or transited through Libya since she led the charge to overthrow the dictator Muammar Gaddafi. And so, as she offers this advice, I hope that people across this country are cringing. Quote, I think Europe needs to get a handle on migration because that is what lit the flame. I admire the very generous and compassionate approaches that were taken, particularly by Angela Merkel, but I think it's fair to say Europe has done its part and we must send a very clear message. We are not going to be able to continue to provide refuge and support because if we don't deal with the migration issue, it will continue to roil the body politic. What about the American wars? What about the cause of the displacement of these people? Not addressed. And at Northumbria University in Britain, Tanya Bultmann, a history professor, is quoted, ultimately, immigration is not actually the problem that inflamed voters. Much more foundational issues such as austerity are the real reason. Immigrants and refugees are simply the scapegoats populists have chosen to use to drive forward their ideas. And let's remember that in her first months as Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton destabilized the nation of Honduras. And these are Honduran refugees primarily who are part of this caravan today. And let us not forget that she counseled returning the young teenage migrants who were showing up unaccompanied at the border during the Obama administration. Just deport them, she said. Who cares why they got here? We need to send a message that more people shouldn't come. So the deterrence practice of the Trump administration is something that started under Obama. And Obama is cited in a separate New York Times article counseling Angela Merkel in 2015 to take a tougher stance and not keep accepting all of those pesky migrants that came from American interventionalism. Angela, you got to get real or it's over, said Obama. And Merkel responded, Barack, I can't believe I'm agreeing with you. And Obama gave similar counsel to Italy and the government of his name was, I think, Rinaldo Renzi. During a meeting at the White House in October of 16, Obama said you must put a limit on the numbers of people Italy was taking in. Really? I mean, I know that Trump is rude and crude and his optics suck. And this is another example of where Obama had good optics obscuring really bad policies. Off the coast of Crimea, there was a maritime showdown yesterday as Ukraine and Russia duked it out. The Russian military opened fire on several Ukrainian vessels. It's described as two ships and a tugboat. Six Ukrainian sailors were wounded, and Russia ultimately seized those vessels. The struggle is over the Kerch Strait, a narrow body of water separating the Black Sea and the Azov Sea. And this unfolded as a direct confrontation between Russia and Western-backed Ukrainian armed forces at sea. And this gets complicated because Petro Poroshenko, the U.S.-backed and hand-picked leader of Ukraine, who has a dirty deal with neo-Nazis, as we'll explain in a moment. He is polling at 8%, and he is now, we're told by the Washington Post, going to declare martial law, which will prevent, at least for the immediate future, the elections from taking place. So, of course, I wasn't there, and I don't take sides here on whether Russia or Ukraine provoked this. Russia claims that Ukraine intentionally provoked this issue. Ukraine claims that they have a treaty which enables them to use these waterways. And according to the Post, Petro Poroshenko said he is introducing martial law across Ukraine for 30 days starting this Wednesday. Over the weekend, I caught up with two powerful reports. One was last week's Frontline episode on PBS, and my friend A.C. Thompson, hosted another powerful episode of Frontline, where he talks directly to members of white nationalist groups. And he exposes what they've been doing. He met with one of their inspirational leaders, a guy who works at Kmart in Denver. I think his name is Mason. And over the weekend, too, I read Max Blumenthal's lengthy report published at Consortium News that originated at Mint Press, which reveals that a recent unsealed FBI indictment of four American white supremacists from the Rise Above movement declared that these men had trained with Ukraine's Azov Battalion, a neo-Nazi militia officially incorporated into the country's National Guard. The training took place after the white supremacist gang participated in violent riots in Huntington Beach, Berkeley, and Charlottesville. The indictment says the Azov Battalion is believed to have participated in training and radicalizing United States-based white supremacy organizations. And Blumenthal reports that they are doing so openly. The Americans chronicle their experiences on social media. And he speculates that there's a likely explanation for the U.S. government's hands-off approach to the Azov recruitment. The extremist militia is fighting pro-Russian separatists as a frontline proxy of Washington. In fact, the United States has directly armed the Azov Battalion, forking over anti-tank rocket launchers and even sending a team of Army officers to meet in the field with Azov commanders last year. Now, Congress has passed legislation forbidding military aid, but the Trump administration authorized $200 million in offensive weaponry and aid to the Ukrainian military, and Blumenthal expects that some of those weapons will fall into the hands of the Azov neo-Nazis. So it's a fascinating report that links these domestic actors here in the United States to extreme right-wing groups in Ukraine. And I encourage you to read the entire report. Max Blumenthal references the ProPublica Frontline report on the core membership of this group, the Rise Above movement. There's much more in Max Blumenthal's report, and I hope you will follow the link in the show file at peterbcollins.com. And while you're there, if you're not a current subscriber, maybe it's Giving Monday or Giving Tuesday, or maybe you're just in a giving mood. But I'd love to get your support in the form of a new subscription. You can join great people like Jim Garrison, Johnny Jump, Kevin Beckley, and Susan Gavet. They kick in $5, $10, $20 a month, and it's easy. You just visit peterbcollins.com, click on the menu tab and pull it down, then click on Become a Subscriber. You'll land on the sign-up page, and your choices are right there. And if you are PayPal allergic, I understand, you can correspond with me at Box 150, 660, San Rafael, California, 94915. Today, I'm releasing an audio and video package of a recent local TV show that I was the host of, regarding the rollout of 5G wireless here in California, and these issues apply all across the country. Our conversation is focused on the local issue, and some of it may not be accessible to people in Florida or Pennsylvania or somewhere outside the United States. But the central issues from the panel, I think, are very important and quite troubling. In simple terms, the wireless industry is trying to use the promise of the faster speeds and ubiquity of internet access to ram through a whole new regulatory framework that will save them $4 billion a year at the expense of local government. And then there are the health risks, which continue to go unaddressed, and the wireless industry, operating like the tobacco industry did 40 years ago, claims, well, you know, there's no real causal connection between cell phone use and various types of cancer. One of the experts who appeared on the show is Dr. Jacqueline Chan. And here's an excerpt from her comments on cell phones and cancer.
So some of the studies have shown, for example, with brain cancer, that it's correlated with the cell phone right up to the head.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's about, on average, five times more. And some of these studies have included, in Israel, they looked at, you know, case match control of 5,000 with 2,500 with glioblastoma and 2,500 with meningioma, mm-hmm. roughly. And they found that there was a very high correlation of a 50% increase in those with glioblastoma. So that was more of an immediate effect with the absorption rate of mm-hmm. the Wi-Fi directly against the head.
So then that's related to the use of your phone, and
so
that's where the highest
cancer.
Concentration
yes.
that you're picking
and
up.
And there's
right?
also been some increased cases of breast cancer, even in a 17-year-old from L.A. He used to put her cell phone right mm-hmm. here. Mm-hmm. And they have correlated the increase in brain cancer with the temporal lobe that the person is holding the cell phone up to.
That's Dr. Jacqueline Chan. She was one of the panelists in this local television show that I moderated recently. And if you go to the show file at peterbcollins.com, there is a new audio podcast that is up on the website and distributed through all our channels. And in the show file for that podcast is the link to the video. And if you prefer to watch, and I think that is the ideal way to absorb this, please follow that link. It's an online video that will play no matter where you are, and I encourage you to check it out. One of the experts who is cited in the program is Dr. Martin Paul, and he is an expert on these issues, a professor emeritus of biochemistry at Washington State University. And I'm linking to his piece published in the Vermont Independent, where he lists eight different clear impacts of microwave frequency electromagnetic fields. He says there are three types of cellular DNA attacks. Each of these DNA changes have roles in cancer causation and in producing the most important mutational changes in humans and diverse animals. There are a wide variety of changes leading to lowered male and female fertility, increased spontaneous abortion, lower levels of estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone, lower libido. Human sperm count has dropped to below 50% of historical levels. There are new neurological and neuropsychiatric effects. He cites 25 reviews. Cell death, oxidative stress, free radical damage, widespread endocrine effects, that's hormonal, increases in intracellular calcium levels following EMF exposures, and cancer causation, brain cancer, salivary cancer, acoustic neuromas, and two other types of cancer go up with cell phone use. So this is stunning information, and I encourage you to absorb it. I've also linked to a slightly more whimsical article written by a woman named Patricia Burke at Natural Blaze called, headlined, Could Wireless Radiation Be Ruining Sex? And she cites a number of issues related to biological changes in humans that some people are linking to exposure to cell phone radiation. Over the long holiday weekend, the New York Times reported an interesting angle on the Saudi killing, the assassination of Jamal Khashoggi in Istanbul in early October, which, of course, the CIA says was clearly authorized by Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. And the wrinkle is that the assassination risks the future of a deal to sell nuclear power plant equipment from the United States to Saudi Arabia. And in a lengthy article, buried near the end, is this important comment from the Times report. In the early days, the administration spent considerable time discussing ways that Saudi Arabia and other Arab states could acquire nuclear reactors. Michael Flynn, who briefly served as National Security Advisor, backed a plan that would have let Moscow and Washington cooperate on a deal to supply Riyadh with reactors, but not the ability to make its own atomic fuel. Now, they fail to mention that Crown Prince Jared was in on that. Also, I believe that this guy Bruce Riody, who is an international man of mystery, along with Michael Cohen, they were trying to cash in on the interests of the Saudi in developing nuclear power capabilities. Here in the United States, with the lame duck session of Congress underway, the Republicans in the House Intelligence Committee want to have one more run at Russiagate. Let me correct myself. This is the Judiciary Committee, not the Intelligence Committee. Good lad of Virginia, the committee's chairman and a Republican, has sent subpoenas to St. James Comey and to Loretta Lynch, the former attorney general in the Obama administration's waning days, inviting them or demanding that they appear in closed-door sessions with members of the committee and the Oversight and Government Reform Committee. And Comey has said he will come and testify, but only in public. He said, "I will resist a closed-door thing because I've seen enough of their selective leaking and distortion. Let's have a hearing and invite everyone to see." Meanwhile, Jerome Corsi, who is a toxic media figure, I won't call him a journalist. He's a propagandist. He spent some time working for Alex Jones' InfoWars, and he's been widely published at WorldNet Daily. And he is publicly announcing that he has rejected a plea offer from the Mueller investigating team. He said that they have been asking him questions over and over again. They want me to say that I willfully lied. I'm not going to agree that I lied because I did not. And he says that they have been peppering him with questions. Who was his source with Julian Assange? Because Corsi had gone public, like Roger Stone, the provocateur, with hints that there would be a big WikiLeaks dump coming. This comes on the same day that George Papadopoulos has been ordered by a federal judge to report to a prison in Oxford, Wisconsin, to begin his grueling 2-week sentence because he lied to the FBI and to the Mueller investigation. And I'll note that we still don't have any public evidence of the kind of meddling by Russia. In particular, we don't have any conclusive evidence that WikiLeaks was the conduit that Russian hackers used to dump their wares. And I continue to embrace the leak, not hack theories. Check out our recent conversation with Ray McGovern if you want more on that. So Trump did tweet today. He continues to tweak Mueller with tweets. And he said, when Mueller does his final report, will he be covering all of his conflicts of interest in a preamble? And that appears to be Trump's harebrained idea that because Mueller quit a membership and disputed it at one of Trump's golf clubs, that that's a conflict of interest. The tweet continues, will he be recommending action on all of the crimes of many kinds from those on the other side? He's referring to Hillary. Whatever happened to Podesta, he said. And will he be putting in statements from hundreds of people closely involved with my campaign who never met, saw, or spoke to a Russian during this period? Yeah, he's trying to prove a negative here. So many campaign workers, people inside from the beginning, ask me why they have not been called. They want to be. There was, all caps, no collusion, and Mueller knows it. And I have to say that Trump's continuing denials and his repeated use of all caps, no collusion, that is the strongest evidence we have that there was collusion, his repeated denials. We don't have any public evidence from Mueller or elsewhere. Well, we're winning again so much that Trump's war on trade is causing General Motors to announce that they're shutting down 5 factories in North America, and they're going to lay off 3,000 workers on the assembly lines, actually 3,300 in the U.S., 3,000 in Canada, and 8 salaried staff, that's white-collar workers, at corporate headquarters. The plants that will be shut down, Lordstown, Ohio, Detroit Hamtramck, Oshawa, Ontario, transmission plants in Baltimore and Warren, Michigan. Yeah, we're winning. And it feels really good. The Trump team, probably prodded by the tweeter-in-chief, they asked on Friday the Supreme Court to fast-track the appeals of Trump's ban on transgender people serving in the military. And just a note to Trump, probably wasn't a good idea to attack the Chief Justice the day before you decided to ask him for a big favor. At any rate, the lower court that Trump once overturned ruled, quote, there's absolutely no support for the claim that the ongoing service of transgender people would have any negative effect on the military at all. A federal judge who, a judge nominee, who is an expert on suppression in North Carolina, is likely to be jammed onto a federal court by the Republican majority in the Senate. 64-year-old Thomas Farr has been the lead attorney defending congressional and legislative boundaries that the legislature there gerrymandered in 2011. A federal court eventually invalidated those as racial gerrymanders, and the Supreme Court affirmed that decision. Yeah, he's the kind of guy we need on the court, especially after a great election like the midterms we just had. Here in California, the chair of the state Democratic Party, Eric Bauman, a man who I know peripherally, has been accused of sexually assaulting or harassing staff members. Now, what's different about this is that Eric Bauman is an out gay man. And his number three on the hierarchy of the state party said that he has credible, corroborated, and heartbreaking allegations of people on party staff who had been sexually harassed or assaulted by Bauman at party functions. An investigation will follow. Trump is parachuting into Mississippi for two campaign mob rallies today. He's hoping to bring out the Klan vote to support racist Senate candidate Cindy Hyde-Smith. She has given her opponent, Mike Espy, a lot of ammo in the last few weeks, and I predict that Espy will lose because racism is alive and well in Mississippi. And finally today, I just want to give you quick snippets from around the world to underscore that we are in a state of major turmoil. In Beirut, Lebanon, there are protests in the streets against electricity shortages, fraying infrastructure, and increasing pollution. In Paris, there have been repeated demonstrations and the firing of tear gas and water cannons to disperse demonstrators on Saturday who are venting their fury over rising fuel taxes. In Haiti, thousands of protesters filled the streets of Port-au-Prince in a display of public fury over rampant corruption, economic malaise, and other grievances. And in Prague, the Czech Republic is facing daily protests against the billionaire, populist, Trump-like politician who has taken power there. His name is Andrej Babiš. And lawmakers held their second vote of no confidence on Friday. So maybe it's comfort that we're not alone. Or maybe you get the idea that the destabilization of the United States is leading to destabilization elsewhere. Thanks for listening to my daily news and comment podcast. I'll be off the rest of this week, so check back next Monday right here at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.